Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yevamos Daf Ayin Hey. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Mark the Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur 10 lines from the top of Daf Ayin Hey. You'll notice that there is a diamond around the word Tana and an indication that this is Beis, indicating that we saw already a reference to something of this nature back on Daf Ayin Dalid Omid Beis. And there we introduced what was known as the Tana de Bei Rabbi Shmuel, who was elaborating on a pasuk in Dvarim, in that is Vayikra Perik Chof Beis Pasuk Dalid. And the pasuk had read, Ish Ish Mizera Aroin Vutsarua Oizov Bakodoshim Lo Yochal Adasher Yitar. There was an approach taken by the Tana de Bei Yishmael, that's a Tanaic source that was taught in the yeshiva of Rabbi Yishmael, that indicated that that pasuk was talking about a zav, as the pasuk said. It opened up and said who tsaro o zav, who was a Baal Shtei Rios. That means this was a male that had a certain type of male emission that's called zav. And he had two of those emissions, two on the same day or two on two successive days. There was also reference made to a Mitzora who was in a waiting period in order to establish whether he is truly afflicted with Tzoras, and that was called a Mitzora Musgar. What's common to a Zav Baal Shtei Rios and a Mitzora Musgar is that they are Tomei for a there's a 7-day tumah period, at the conclusion of which there is no sacrifice that is brought. However, we have a Tana here with which we open up our shiur today that refers to the same pasuk Vayikra Perik Chof Beis Pasuk Dalid, but says that that pasuk is referring to a zav that had three sightings, three emissions, and a Mitzora that was Mukhlat. Mukhlat means it was decided that he is a definite Mitzora, not a Sofek or questionable Mitzora, but a definite Mitzora. At the conclusion of these two periods of defilement, of Tumah, there is a requirement to bring a sacrifice. Until that point, they are referred to as mechusrei kapora, meaning even if they went to the mikveh and the sunset, which is part and parcel of general purification with regard to certain cases of defilement, as is the zav that had three sightings or the mitzora that was viewed as a definite mitzora, called a mitzora muchlat, they have to bring a sacrifice. And until they bring the sacrifice, so they don't achieve full purification. One of the most prominent manifestations of this defilement is with regard to the eating of sacrifices. Namely, that even though for other areas that require purity, one is said to be tohor even without the bringing of the sacrifice, with regard to the consumption of sacrificial meat or meal offerings, the individual is considered tomei until he brings those sacrifices, as we said, which is brought on the day following the last day of purification, which involves the mikveh and sunset. And the next day, a sacrifice is brought. So now we pick up the Gemara, 10 lines from the top. Ulahach Tana de Poligole de Tana de Bei Rishmael. And according to the Tanaic approach that differs with the Tana of Bei Rabbi Shmuel de Omar that says Bezav Bal Sholosh Rios Uvimitzor Muchlot Hakosuv Medaber. This school of thought says that that very pasuk in Vayikra Perikhov Beis Pasuk Dalet is dealing with a person who is Mechusur Kapora, who needs to bring the sacrifice, as is the case with a Zav Baal Sholosh Rios, he had three emissions, or the Mitzora Muchlot. Vahai Asher Yitar, and the expression Ad Asher Yitar in the Pasuk means Ad Demaisi Kapora. In other words, that he's viewed as still Tomei until he brings Kapora. Brings Kapora means until he brings the sacrifices. Trei kroi bekotshim lomani lomali. Why do I have to have two sources that express this idea? One source being in the case of a yoledes, a woman who gave birth, and the other source being with being the zav. Two psukim, two sources where this idea is mentioned that kapora is ma'akev, that they cannot eat sacrifices until they bring their sacrifices. In other words, couldn't the Torah have written this idea that you cannot partake of sacrifices until you bring your requisite korbonos that conclude the tumah period, and I would be able to derive the other topic from having stated one? The Gemara says, Tzrichi, I need both topics to be spelled out. The ikos of Rachmono Bioledes, had the Torah written in the case of a woman who gave birth, and a woman who gives birth, the Torah dictates that she is in a state of tumah for 40 days in the case of a male birth and 80 days in the case of a female birth. So had the Torah written this idea that the bringing of the sacrifices that concludes her tumah period is a binding factor in order to be able to partake of kotshim, of sacrifices, mishum demeruba tumasa. There, it has a certain stringency to it in that it has, its meruba means a lot of tumah. A lot of tumah means it's an 80-day tumah period. Avo bezav. But in the case of the male who experienced the three emissions, which results in him being tomei for 7 days, emo lo. I might have thought that in his case, he could partake of sacrifices even without the bringing of the requisite, the required korban, the required sacrifice at the end of his tumah period. The ikos of Rachmona Bezav, had the Torah written the necessity of bringing the sacrifice in the case of the Zav, the Lohuter Michlolo, we don't find any element of leniency where we relax the tumah stringencies. That's Huter Michlolo. Huter means something that's allowed. Michlolo from the category, from the general category of being prohibited. We don't find Huter Michlolo in the case of Zav. Aval Yoledes, Emolo. In the case of a Yoledes, we find a point of leniency. What's the point of leniency? That a woman, after having given birth according to Torah law, once again, we're not dealing with practical applied halacha, but according to the Torah, this woman can see a female type blood flow, and she remains tohor, she remains allowed, permitted to her husband. So there's an element of leniency that we find in the case of Yoledes that you don't find in other cases of tumah. You don't find in the case of Azav. So I would have thought that maybe in the case of Yoledes, which is Huter Michlola, so maybe the bringing of the sacrifice at the conclusion of her birth period, that sacrifice is not a binding or restrictive factor when it comes to her eating of sacrificial meat. Tzricho, therefore, it has to be spelled out in the case of Yoledes as well. We are about to read a pasuk from Vayikra, Perek Yudal of Pasuk Lamed Beis. On the side of the Gemara, we have this pasuk spelled out. It's found in the context of Shrotzim. The Shrotzim are different, eight different creatures that the Torah enumerates as being capable of conveying defilement if they're dead. So it says, V'chol asher yipol olav mehem b'moysam yitma, any of them, of the shrutzim that falls upon something else, it will become tameh mikol, kli eitz, obeged, or osak, kol kli asher yaseh melacha bohem. Pasuk is describing if some sheretz meat, dead sheretz meat, falls on a vessel, if it's made of wood, of cloth, of leather, or of sack. Kol kli asher yaseh melacha bohem b'amayim yuva v'tameh ad ha'orah v'taher. So it becomes, the vessel becomes tameh for the balance of the day until it's immersed in a mikveh and the sun sets. So the pasuk says, "V'mayim yuva v'tameh ad ha'orev v'toher." Lomo li. The Rashi, "V'mayim yuva v'tameh ad ha'orev al korchuch l'truma ayri." This pasuk that we just read is dealing with truma, meaning that if there was tumas sheretz, so it will be considered tomei until immersion and setting of the sun, and then it can be used, that vessel can be used with truma. So and how do we know that it's talking about truma? Me deboy hair of shemesh, from the fact that sunset is necessary. That's a necessary factor when it comes to truma eating. In other words, one who was defiled, he cannot partake of truma until the end of the defilement period and the sun sets. Well, this very point, tepokli mi uvo hashemesh v'toher, and it goes on to say v'achar yochal min hakodoshim. Why couldn't the halacha be learned from that pasuk, which is found in Vayikra Perichov Beis Pasuk Zayin? So, what do I need this pasuk for? The pasuk of Vayikra Yud Aleph Pasuk Lamed Beis. The Gemara continues, Omar Bizera Lenegia. Negia means contact. The other pasuk that we refer to is a pasuk that refers to, that deals with the eating of truma. Here we're talking about touching of truma. So the pasuk of B'mayim Yuva is talking about vessels, and vessels obviously don't eat things, they touch things that are put into them. So when we're also, Rashi adds that the pasuk tells us the laws regarding the vessel touching the truma after the vessel had been tomei tumas sheretz, and the same will apply to a person who had been tomei tumas sheretz. That, and the result of this is that a tvuyom shall not touch truma. Why not? Because what's a tvuyom? He's a person that finished the truma period, went to mikveh, but the sun has not yet set. So we hear Rabbi Zeiro's explanation that the pasuk of b'mayim yuvav v'tomei d'orev v'toher is talking about negia, disanya. And before we continue, though, with this source, it will be making reference to a posuk in Vayikra, Perek, Yud Aleph, Posuk Lamed Beis. And you'll notice, as we indicated on the side, we have this posuk, and we have these words taken from the posuk. It says, Vitomei, B'mayim Yuvo Vitomei, Yochol Akoil. Is it tomei for everything? Talmud lomar v'toher. Right after that, it says ad ha'orev v'toher. E v'toher. V'toher means purified. Yochal akol, is it considered purified for everything? Talmud lomar v'tomei. So ha ketzah. How are we to resolve this pasuk? On the one hand, the pasuk says that there is tuma, that upon immersing it in the water, it's tomei. And with the setting of the sun, it is tahor. So how are we to make sense of these? Ha-ketzat, kan le-maiser, kan le-truma. When it comes to maiser sheni, a certain level of tahara is required. And that is the immersion in the mikveh. After one immerses in the mikveh, even if the sun has not set, he is considered tahor. However, for truma, the immersion in the mikveh is not enough. There has to be the setting of the sun as well. Now, there's a point in Rashi that helps understand what the problem is. Because when you read the pasuk, it said simply, "B'mayim yuvav v'tomei," that the item is immersed, the vessel or the person that had been tomei immerses, and he remains tomei until ad ha'erev v'toyer, and then with the setting of the sun, he becomes tor. In and of itself, that should have made perfect sense, that the immersion in the mikveh is not enough. However, the pasuk uses the term v'tomei, and that is something Rashi points out. Yochol akol, we're reading Rashi now, Talmud Lomar Vitoher. Is he Tomei for everything? No. It says Vitoher. Midalog si vayitar. From the fact that the Pasuk does not use the word vayitar in that verb form, mashma de ameikora koi. It indicates that he was really Tor earlier, Kodim Harav Shemesh. He was Tor even before the setting of the sun. And yet the Pasuk said that he's Tomei until the sun sets. So we just explained that with regard to Meiser, there is one standard, namely that the immersion in the mikveh is enough to create tara for Meiser Sheni eating. However, for Truma, there you have to have the sunset as well. The Gemara asks, V'epuch ano? Maybe we should switch these around. Mistabro ki hechi de chamiro achilo de Truma me achilo de Meiser. It's most likely that just like the eating of Truma is a more severe, serious matter than the eating of Meiser. In other words, the standards that we apply for Truma eating are higher than the standards we apply to Meiser Sheni eating. So, Hachinami Chamira Negia de Truma, Mi Negia de Meiser. By the same token, more stringent are the standards that apply to contact with Truma, that it will require the setting of the sun as well as, or in addition to, the immersion in the mikveh, mi negia de meiser, more so than the standard will apply to the contact with meiser, where if someone had been tomei, it's enough that they immerse in the mikveh, or a vessel that had been tomei is immersed in the mikveh. It's then subsequent contact with the meiser sheni produce will not ruin it, even though the sun has not yet set. Another approach says that the laws concerning touching of truma are learned from the following pasuk: "Bechol kodesh lo yisiga azhara la'ochel." That is a warning against eating. Oeinu ela lanogea. Maybe that's a warning. A commandment not to touch. Talmud loymar b'chol kodesh lo siga v'la mikdash lo yisavoy. Makish kodesh l'mikdash. In this pasuk, you see a comparison between that which has been sanctified and the beis hamikdash. V'al mikdash is the beis hamikdash lo savo. Someone who was tomei should not enter. Ma mikdash tovar sheish bo netilas neshama. Just like entrance to the Beis HaMikdash in the state of Tumah, we know, carries with it a Kores penalty. Af Kodesh, so too the reference to Kodesh in this Pasuk, Dover Shiesh Bo Netilas Neshama. It's a reference to some aspect of that which is sanctified that would, in a state of Tumah, involve a Kores penalty. And that happens to be eating. And with regard to touching, we don't find, there's no precedent for kores with regard to touching something. And that which the pasuk, when referring to eating, uses the word lo siga, even though it's a reference to eating. Hachi ka'omar, it is telling me the following, that negia ki'achila, which means he who is usur to eat is usur to touch. touch. Not that the touching would lead to a kores penalty, but that we apply the standard regarding qualifications, who is qualified or alternatively disqualified from eating, would be disqualified from or prohibited from touching. Let's take a look at the Rashi. Af kodesh davar sheyesh bo netilas neshama. When we read this pasuk, b'chol kodesh lo siga ve'al hamikdash lo yisofoi, we understood that to mean that it's a reference to eating. Dahainu achila betuma. That's a reference to eating in a state of defilement. Shehu gabi kodesh bekores. In the case of eating something that is of a sacrificial nature in a state of tuma, that could result in the kores punishment. Ve'ochel truma betuma. For me, someone who eats truma in a state of defilement, when bodily defilement, that is punishable by death at the hands of heaven. Dechtiv umesubo kiyachaluhu. So as we step back and look over this Gemara, we see sources that there is a commandment, a prohibition of touching truma in a state of while one is tamei. The pasuk we saw, the first pasuk was Vayikra Yud Aleph Pasuk Lamed Beis. The second pasuk, which might be the source for negia of truma, is Vayikra Perek Yud Beis Pasuk Dalet. We continue with a quote from the Mishnah, Ptua Daka, and the Mishnah went on to say, Nishayim lo yochlu betruma. The wife of a Kohen that experienced this injury of Ptua Daka, which we have discussed in the past, has to do with an injury to the man's reproductive organs, the male organs of reproduction. The Mishnah says that if a Kohen experiences that, so his wife cannot eat from Truma. Now, you have to remember that which it said in the Mishnah, namely that if a Kohen couple, in other words, the man was a Kohen married to a woman, the woman was not necessarily from a Kohen family, but the fact she was married to Kohen, that entitled her to eat from Truma. Then, in the course of their married life, he experienced this injury of Ptua Daka. As long as he has not cohabited with her after that injury, she is allowed to continue eating from Truma. Now, you have a case of a woman married to a man that in the event that she actually has relations with him after he became a Ptua Daka, after he experienced this male organ injury, that renders her unfit or disqualifies her from eating Truma. But as we said, the Mishnah says that until that point, though, she is allowed to continue eating Truma. We describe this situation as what's called Mishtameris Labia Psula. Mishtameris means she's waiting for intimacy that's of a forbidden nature. A Ptua Daka is not allowed to remain married to a regular Jewish woman. So, as we said, the Mishnah teaches that until they had their intimacy after this injury, she is able to eat Truma. So the Gemara, let's read the Gemara now. Man Tana, who is the Tanaic authority that tells us Mishtameris Labia Psula Doraisa Ochla, that a woman who is Mishtameris for a Bia Psula Doraisa. Once again, Bia is intimacy which is against the Torah. That's intimacy with the Ptua Daka. A Ptua Daka is not allowed to have intimacy with a rank-and-file Jewish woman, even if it's his own wife. And yet the Mishnah says that she continues eating Truma, even though she's anticipating this. The word Mishtameris can mean anticipating or waiting for a Bia Psula, unless he would divorce her, so she is in effect waiting for intimacy with him. So The Mishnah indicates that even though she's in this state where she's anticipating or waiting for bia psula, prohibited bia, she's still entitled to eat from the truma. Amar Rabbi Elazar b'machlokes shnuya, Rabbi Elazar v'Rabbi Shimon hi. The Amora, Rabbi Elazar says that this is a point that is controversial, and the opinions of Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon, they allow. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, afilu teimo Rabbi Meir. You can say that our Mishnah is even in accordance with Rabbi Meir. Shaini hacha, the case here is different than the case of, let us say, an almona that is married to a kohen, that is marrying or is going to be married by a kohen gadol, or a grusha v'chalitza is a kohen hedyot, where if they did not consummate their marriage, you find Rabbi Meir saying that it is prohibited for her to eat truma, because an almona widow is not allowed to marry a kohen gadol. Likewise, a gerusha, a divorcee, is not allowed to marry a standard kohen. So if a standard kohen had been ma'aris, had betrothed a divorcee, she is waiting for a bia psula. According to Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon, she is allowed to eat from truma. According to Rabbi Meir, she's not allowed to eat from truma. So Rabbi Yochanan points out, though, that our Mishnah that allows the wife of the Psua Daka to continue eating from Truma can be even something Rabbi Meir would agree with. Shaini Hocha, why is this different? Why is the case of the woman married to the Psua Daka, to the Psua Daka Kain, why is this different than the Grusha that was betrothed by a Kohen? Why there, by the grusha betrothed by the kohen, does Rabbi Meir say she's not entitled to eat from truma? And yet, in the case of the wife of the Ptsua Daka kohen, she is allowed to eat from truma until he has intimacy with her. So Rabbi, the Gemara says this is different. Shekvar ochla. She had already been eating legitimately before the husband kohen became a Ptsua Daka, before he experienced this injury. Was of totally kosher marriage, and through that she was eating truma. So that even Rabbi Meir will allow her to continue eating truma until she actually has intimacy with the Psua Daka. Rabbi Elazar, now Rabbi Elazar, the Amora who did not doesn't agree that Rabbi Meir would allow. Why not? This, so he answers this consideration of shekvar ochla. Lo aminan. The fact that she had been eating truma legitimately before her husband experienced the injury, that's not a factor. Lo teimahochi. If you don't agree with that, if you don't say thusly, then what are you going to say about the following? Bas Yisrael shenisis lekayin umeis baila, a non-Kohen woman, means her father was a Yisrael, that married a husband Kohen, and the husband died. And we'll just add, and there were no children from the Kohen. Tochal, are you going to say that this Bas Yisrael is entitled to eat Shekvar Ochla because she had been eating while her husband was alive? We know that's not the case. A Bas Yisrael whose husband Kohen, the Kohen dies, and there are no children, she stops eating Truma. Ah, Kvar Ochla, she had been eating once. That doesn't make a difference. So why in the case of the woman married to the Ptua Daka should that make any difference? Rabbi Yochanan responds. He says, Hosam poka kinyone. In the case of the Bas Yisrael that was married to the Kain, when that husband dies, the whatever binding force between them that had existed is voided. It doesn't. It expires. Hachalo poka kinyone. But here the woman who is married to a Ptsua Daka, she's still considered his wife. She's an Eishes Ish, even though it's also for her to cohabit with him. So this is much more different than the case of Rabbi Meir's stringency of preventing the grusha to the Kohen Hedyot from eating. And as far as the svara of a kvar ochla is concerned, that is not something deny that svara because of the case of the Bas Yisrael Shemisa the Kohen. That's not the reason for denying that svara. That's as far as Rabbi Yochanan's approach. Ezu Ptsua. The topic heading that we have for this piece of Gemara is very simply Ptsua Daka, and the Gemara gets into the details of this injury. So what is a Ptsua Daka? Tanu Rabbanan, Ezu Ptsua Daka. What is meant by that type of injury? Kol Shiniftsu Beitzim Shelo Vafilu Achas Mehen. When the term Beitzim in this context is a reference to the man's testicles. So niftsu means they were injured. They experienced some type of impact. Even one of them, a regular healthy male, has two. So a ptsua daka is considered such even if one of the two were victims of impact. Vafilu nikvu, vafilu nimoku, vafilu chosru. Even if they were pierced. Nikfu is nikfu, the word nekev, a hole. They were pierced. Even nimoku, this has to do with something that dissolves. Afilu chosru, even if it is missing. Even if a small amount is missing. All of these are considered psuadaka. Amar Rabbi Shmuel benosh Rabbi Yochanan Broka. So Rabbi Shmuel, the son of Rabbi Yochanan Broka, says, Shamati mipi chachomim bekerem biyavne. I heard from the scholars that learned in the town of Yavne, in that community, the assembled students were set up in rows, like a vineyard is set up in rows. So hence, Kerem B'Yavne is a reference to the yeshiva in Yavne. Kol she'ein lo elo beitza achas, any man that has only one beitza. Now, in the brackets, there is language that needs to be repaired, needs to be corrected. So if we skip the brackets for a moment, the Chachomim had said in Kerem B'Yavne that any man that has one Beitza, Harehu Kisris Chama V'Kosher, he is viewed like a Sris Chama. Chama is the a type of, maybe called fever. Literally, it's the sun, but it's a case of sresis. Sresis is a male who's incapable of procreation. Sris chama means it's something that came as a result of heaven's ordaining thusly. In other words, as a result of some kind of ailment. So, if a person has only one beitza, they say that he's considered like a sris chama, and the Torah does not prohibit a person like that. The Torah asks is only someone that experienced impact or some type of crushing. Let's go over the Gemara again with the bracketed section. The Chachomim and Kerem B'Yavne had said, Kol shein lo ela beitza achas, eino ela sris chama v'kosher. If he has one beitza, he is a sris chama. So the Gemara says, sris chama salkadaitoch. What the Gemara is bothered by is that sris chama is an ailment. A person that has only one beitza, that's his nature. It's not a sickness. So how can the source say that one who has only one beitza is a sris chama? Once again, a sris chama is a situation where he became sterile as a result of a sickness, and this person was born with one beitza. So the Gemara answers the refined languages: Harehu kisris chama v'kosher. He is like a sris chama. Just like a sris chama, just like someone who is sterile as a result of a sickness, he is not disqualified from marrying into the Jewish people, from marrying other rank and file Jewish people. The Torah, when it discusses sterility or impotency as a result of the items mentioned in the Torah, that's a ptsua, that's a impact. Doch is a crushed, or korus is something cut. Some action had to have happened to that area of the male reproductive system before he can be considered disqualified and rendered prohibited from marrying into the rank and file Jewish people. The Gemara asks, "V'nikev loy moilid?" If the beitza was punctured, as the source had said, we dashed underlined the word, and you'll notice we have a little arrow to the side of the Gemara text, so that you can see in the source it said vafilu nikvu, merely punctured. Is that really so that nikev is not molid, is not capable of reproduction? Vahu gavra, there was an incident with a man, the solik ledikla. He was he had gone up a palm tree, the charze silva babetim. Silva is a literally it's a thorn. The palm tree, it has actually very pointy outgrowths from it, and so as he was climbing the tree, so one of these pointy leaves or thorns that are characteristic of the dikla of the palm tree punctured him there in the beitzim. V'nofak mine kechut de mugla, and they noticed that some like a stream of mugla. Mugla is often it's translated as pus, some type of liquid that came as a result of that particular puncture injury. Violet, and that man was able, and that man bore children anyway. So what do we see? We see from that story that a puncture wound to the beitzim does not create sterility. The Gemara responds, Ha shalach Shmuel lekamei derav, the Omarle, Shmuel had sent a message to Rav, and saying, Tzei v'chazer al bonov me'ayin hem, go check out where his children really come from. Rashi points out, very simply, Zonsa ishto, this man that experienced this puncture injury to the beitzim, really was rendered sterile. The fact that his wife, to whom he was so happily married, seemed to become pregnant after his injury, that does not indicate that he is the one that impregnated her, but rather the woman went ahead and had some type of illicit relations, and that's what impregnated her, because her husband, after this injury, in fact, is rendered sterile. Omar Vihuda, Omar Shmuel, Tzua Daka Bidei Shemayim Kosher. Let's take a look at Rashi. Bidei Shemayim Ayidei Ra'amim Uborad O Meimei Imo. Bidei Shemayim means some type of natural cause. Heaven is responsible through a very loud thunderclap, or hail, or he's born that way. Someone like that, then, even though he may have experienced the injury, but it was bidei shamayim, he is kosher. Kosher means he can marry a rank and file a Jewish girl of pure descent. Omar Rava, Hainu de Karinon Ptsua, Velo Karinon Ha-potsua. The Torah refers to him as the Ptsua Daka, not using the Hey letter before the word. Had that been the case, Ha-potsua Daka, that would have indicated that he was born like that. But The Torah doesn't say hapotsua, it just says ptsua, indicating that if it were hapotsua, that if someone were born that way with a some type of testicle deficiency, he would still be kosher. The Masnisa Tana, we have a Tanaic source that says Nemar lo yovo ptsua, Nemar lo yovo mamzer. Ma lahalon bidei adam. The pasuk warns against these two types of people of marrying into the Jewish community. A ptsua daka is warned against that, and a mamzer, an illegitimate child, is warned against that as well. It means the child. We use the word child. It means the offspring of an isur arayis, where the mamzer is we call illegitimate, not in the common contemporary terms, but it means that the mother that bore the child had been impregnated through a forbidden type relation, forbidden to the tune of kores. So just like the case of mamzer, a child is born, it's a decision someone made to have that intimacy, that's bidei odom. So afkan, so too the prohibited ptsuadaka is where it's something that was human instigated, human caused, and not at the hands, not as a result of something heavenly. Omar Rova, Ptsua Bechulan, Doch Bechulan, Krus Bechulan. This will be explained as the Gemara goes on. Just note that in the Torah, the term Ptsua Daka appears and Krus Shavcha appears as being injuries that affect those particular organs of reproduction of the male. Ptsua Bechulan. So we explained before has to do with an injury as a result of impact. Bein shenifzu shenifza hagid. There are three organs that are of concern to us. One is the gid, the male organ that is associated with circumcision. Bein shenifzu beitzim. We explained before what the beitzim were. Bein shenifzu chutei beitzim. The chutei beitzim are the tubes that connect the beitzim themselves to the male organ, from which eventually the male seed is emitted. Doch bekulan. Doch is crushed. So we potsua, we said, is impact. Doch is crushed. Bein shenidach hagid, bein shenidchu beitzim, bein shenidchu chutei beitzim. Krus bekulan. Krus means something that's severed. Bein shenichras hagid, bein shenichrusu beitzim, bein shenichrusu chutei beitzim. All of these problems will render the man a ptsuadaka, krus shavcha, and hence he is forbidden to marry a woman of Jewish pedigree. Omar lei hahu mirabonon l'rava. A certain Rav asked Rava, or a student asked Rava, Mimai dehai ptsua daka boisamokam, who is to say that ptsua daka that the Torah refers to is at the male area of reproduction? Emo me rosho, maybe it's a person who experienced some type of head injury. Omar le, midelo mono be doros. Rashi explains from the fact that generations were not numbered. Rashi we're looking at is in the on the fourth narrow line. Midlo mono be dor shma mino midlo ksivo be ad dor shlishi o asiri. Kamo shenemar be mamzer v'amonim o'ovi u'mitzri. In other forbidden relations, the Torah mentions up till a certain number of generations. For example, a mitzri, it says that a mitzri is forbidden until the third generation. The mamzer, the Torah makes reference to 10 generations. In this particular disqualification of psuadaka, krus shavcha, you don't see any generational reference. So the Gemara continues, shma mina ba'oisa mokaim. It must be that the deficiency is in that place, the place of reproduction, namely, he's incapable of producing even a next generation. The Gemara asks, "V'dilma haydilo mona boy dorois." Maybe that which the Torah doesn't mention generations, the iu who the oser brei ubar brei kosher. Maybe it simply means that it's a type of injury that renders the person himself prohibited, but his son or grandson would be allowed. So how are you to know that psuadaka is a reference to a reproductive type injury? The Gemara answers, Dumia de Krus Shavcha. It's taught in the Torah in the same context as Krus Shavcha. Ma Krus Shavcha boisamokam. Just like Krus Shavcha is taken to mean at this point, in that spot where the issue of reproduction is a factor. So af hai nami, so too the psuadako is ba'oisoi mokom. It's an injury regarding the area of reproduction. The Gemara asks, Krus Shavcha gufe mimai de boisamokam hu, emo misfase. Krus Shavcha, who is to say that it is at the male organ of reproduction area? Maybe it is a function of his lips. Now, the word shofcha means pouring out. It's an issue of some type of liquid release. So maybe it means that his lips are cut. The lips is the area from which saliva drools. So the Gemara answers, shofcha ksiv, b'mokoyim sheshofech. The injury that the Torah refers to is at a place where the liquid is shofech. The word shofech indicates something that spills out as opposed to something that is hurled at a distance. Saliva doesn't spill out. It's something that one would spit at a distance. And the word shofech is not indicative of that. So we exclude the lips being cut. The emo mechotmo. If it's a function of something that doesn't go at a distance, maybe it means his nose is cut, where there is nasal secretion, which spills, so to speak, as opposed to hurled at a distance. So the Gemara says, no, krus shofcha doesn't mean chotmo, is a reference to the nose. Miksiv krus bashofuch, krus shofchoksiv. Again, attention is paid to the grammar. It doesn't say krus shofuch. The Rashi explains, mi ksiv krus bashofuch mi mokum horogiu lishpoch koidin lochein. Does it say that the area that customarily liquid comes forth was cut? Again, linguistically, krus shofcha does not reflect the nose. Rather, krus shofcha ksiv mi sha'al yedei krisa shofech, sha'al shelo al yedei krisa eino shofech elo mikaleach. The Torah is describing something that as a result of being cut, it now the liquid spills, as opposed to without being cut, it comes out as a stream. Mekalech means a stream with a certain amount of force to it. But when the organ is cut, so then it simply spills out as opposed to being emitted with a force. Lafuke high, to the exclusion of the nose, the idi v'idi, whether it's before it being cut or after it being cut, shofeh hu. All that happens with regard to the nose is that the nose secretion is shofech. It pours out, it dribbles out, as opposed to being hurled out. Just to refine the last point is EDVD means whether it's before being cut or after it being cut, shofechu. Krus shavcha, just to repeat ourselves, indicates something that, as a result of the cutting, a change in the way the liquid is emitted. And that is applicable to the organ of the male organ of gender organ, as opposed to the nose. B'masnisa tana. Here is a second approach. In a Tanaic source, it's taught, Nemar lo yovo, and again, this is a second approach to establishing how do we know that psua daka is an injury to that area that constitutes the male gender organs as opposed to something else. So we have in the Tanaic source, Nemar lo yovo psua daka, v'nemar lo yovo imamzer. The Torah excludes, disqualifies these kind of people from entering the, marrying into the pure pedigree Jewish people, a psua daka and a mamzer. Ma lahalon ba'oisa mokom, afkan ba'oisa mokom. Just like the mamzer is a function of intimacy, which involves that particular area of the male anatomy, so too the psua daka is something that has to do with that particular area of the human anatomy. Nikev lamato me'atora shekinegdoi lamalo me'atora. Here we need Rashi to describe what's being described. We're dealing, of course, with a nekev. A nekev is a hole, a puncture. Nikev lamato me'atora. Rashi says, besoif hagid, at the end of the male organ, klapi karka, facing groundwards, v'holech hanekev balachsoin, the hole starts there, and we're talking about an injury right now, not something that's natural. A hole starts at the lower part, at the end of the male organ, and continues in an upward diagonal fashion, v'yotze kenegdo ilamalu min ha'atora klapi aguf, and it comes out, the other end of the hole is closer to the body, above the atora. The atora is a raised piece of flesh that is characteristic of a circumcised male that appears close to the end, but not at the actual very end. The very last few millimeters of male organ is basically simple flesh, which is, in terms of halacha, you will see is somewhat inconsequential. Here, however, the hole started in that part, the lowest extremity of the male organ, and it continued upwards in a diagonal fashion, ending up above the atora. So what does this do as far as halacha is concerned? Sovar Rav Chiya bar Abba lachshuri. Rav Chiya bar Abba was of the opinion that since both holes are not above the atora, only one hole is above the atora, this doesn't render him unfit. Amar le Rabbi Asi. Rabbi Asi addresses Rav Chiya and says, Hochi Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, atora kol shehi me'akeves. Rashi says, kol shehu kevan shanekev oiver derech al pinei kol ha'atora. Since the hole emerges above all of the atora again being that ring of raised flesh toward the end of the male organ, here the hole emerges above that, afilu nekev kolshu, makevis toldosu apostle, even a hole of a very minor nature, it's kolshu, very small hole, nevertheless interferes, prevents procreation. The Gemara continues with a quote from the Mishnah, daf ayin amud aleph, v'im nishtayer me'atora, afilu kechut hasayra kosher. If there remains even a hair's breadth of atora, even though below that point the male organ flesh was cut off, but if there remains a kol shehu, kachut hasayro means a hair's breadth of atora, then he remains kosher. He's acceptable. He's acceptable to marry into the Jewish people. Yosef Ravina v'koma bayale. Malo hachut shomru. When the Mishnah makes reference to malo hachut, a hair's breadth of atora that remains, alpene kula o alpene ruba. Does that mean in the entire circumference of the male organ, or simply in the majority of the circumference? Amar le Rabba Toisva le Ravina. Rabba Toisva says to Ravina, Malo Achut al Pene. And here we have a common problem in the Shas, we call it a Girsa version problem. The text as we have says, Al Pene Ruba, the Klape Resha. as long as it surrounds the majority. And klapei reisha means, Rashi says, litzad gufo, that it's closer to the body. That is the amount that remains, the majority of the circumference, and that which is closer to the body. The gra indicates that there's an alternative girsa which is more strict, and that's apanei kula. We continue in the Gemara. On the side of the Gemara, we have a nosei mivneh heading. The double underline, which you can see in our Gemara, highlights the names Rav Huna and Rav Chisda. And these opinions are Cholkin, Be'inyan, Gid, Kekumus, and Kemar Zev. Here we're talking about an injury to the male organ, leaving it in the shape of either a kumus. A kumus, I think if you're familiar with what a fountain pen looks like, or possibly a bottle cork, assuming that the bottle cork is wide, significantly wider at the top, and it narrows, it tapers down to practically a point at the end. So a kumus literally is a quill. So if you're familiar with the way a writing quill is shaped, it tapers to a point. So here the male organ is cut away in such a way that it tapers to a point. And marzev is a roof gutter. It's that type of semi-circle or U-shaped drain gutter that runs along rooftops. That's a marzev. So here we're dealing with a male organ that, how it happened, the Gemara doesn't mention, but it's been cut away, leaving it looking like that. So that the flesh, a good portion of the flesh of the male organ has been cut away. The tubes that remain intact, but the basic organ itself, though the tubes are left intact, but the other flesh that constitutes the male organ has been cut away, leaving it looking like a marzev, this U-shaped entity. The Gemara is concerned with the topic we've been dealing with till now. At what point is a person going to be disqualified from marrying a woman of pure Jewish pedigree? When the mamzer, or I should say the Ptsuadak and Krushavcha, those who he can marry are limited, but not a rank and file pure pedigree Jewish woman. Omar Avuna, Kekumus Kshera, Kemarzev Psula. If the organ is shaped like a kumus, it's kosher, the quill shape, the tapered to a point shape, it's okay. However, if it looks like a marzev, the man is unfit. Hai Sholit Bo Avira, Vahai Lo Sholit Bo Avira. Sholit Bo Avira means wind or air has an effect. Sholit means rules over, but it means it's affected by the air. And the issue here is that the wind or the exposure to air will disable the male seed from fertilizing and creating procreation in his union with a female. So Sholit Bo Avira is something that one would want to avoid. So if it's shaped like a marzev, that is what's going to happen, and the seed will be rendered, will be disabled because of the temperature drop that's affected. Of those who are familiar with these areas of human reproduction know that the temperature of the male seed must be maintained at a certain degree of warmth in order for it to be capable of procreation. If it's exposed to the air, and it's hence the temperature drop, so it doesn't disabled from being able to fertilize and procreate. But if it's shaped like the kumus, that the seed that's in the tubes
is preserved at the right temperature till the end. V'Rav Chista Omar, Kemar Zev Sheirok Kekumus Psul. You'll notice that Rav Chista takes an opposite approach. The Marzev shape is okay. He's still kosher. The kumus is not good. He's rendered unfit. And why is that? High gorid v'hai lo gorid. The word gorid you can associate with friction. And we're talking here about, in the case of the act of intimacy, in order for the male to be stimulated, so there has to be gorid taking place. And if the organ is shaped like a marzev, so the basic circumference is maintained, and that brings the male to stimulation, which will result in the required ejaculation necessary for reproduction. If it's kekumus, so it's very narrow and it's tapered, tapers down to a very fine point, where the whole organ basically is lacking, most of the organ is lacking in the necessary diameter in order to achieve gorid. Omar Rava, Kavose de Rav Huna Mistabra. Rava prefers Rav Huna's approach, where the marzev is possible and the kumus is okay. High, low, sholet, vo aviro. The kumus is has proper temperature maintenance. The air doesn't influence it. The high, the marzev, though, sholet, vo aviro. Avira, the avir, the air, does have an effect and will lower the temperature of the seed, rendering it incapable of procreation. Now, you might ask, but nevertheless, isn't there still a problem of the gorid when you're dealing with the kumus shape? So how can Rava Paskin like Rav Huna when the kumus presents the gorid problem? The Gemara answers, Midi dehave abarzo dechavita. The explanation of that is that gorid can still be achieved even though it tapers to a point. Nevertheless, closer to the man's body, to the male's body, it has sufficient diameter in order to achieve the necessary conditions for the male stimulation. A barza de chavita. Barza is a stopper of a barrel. So if a barrel, let's say, has a hole in it for releasing its wine, so you will stop the hole up if it doesn't have a proper spigot to it. You can stop it with what we might term a bottle cork. And we have an illustration on the side which attempts to show the idea here that even though it tapers to a narrow end, nevertheless, at the other extreme of the bottle cork, it has a sufficient diameter. At that point, by the way, it matches the opening of the barrel, and hence it's an effective sealer of the barrel. And using that imagery, so one can imagine then when male-female intimacy is experienced, the necessary stimulation can be achieved all the same. Omar le Ravina lemreimar, Hochi Omar Marzutra Mishmei de Rav Popa. Thusly said Marzutra, Hilchos Bein Kekumus Bein Kemarzev Kshera. Whether it's the kumus shape or the marzev shape, the man is acceptable. Mihu Miboya le Lamato Meatora O Lamalo. But the question that is raised is it below the Atora or above the Atora? So the Gemara answers, Pshita de Lamalo Me Atora. It's obvious that we're talking about the situation exists, either the Kumus shape or the Marzev shape exists above the Atora. I might say, even though it's above the Atora, it's still kosher. The Isal Kadaituch Lamata Me'atora, if you were to think that the issue of these shapes, Kumus or Marzev, is limited to something below the Atorah, hafilu nichras hakid nami, even if the whole area below the Atorah is completely cut away, he's still kosher. So there would be no need to point out that if below the Atorah was kakumus ukamaz, he'd certainly be kosher. So this last point would seem to be very obvious. So what was Ravina even saying to Maremar in the first place by saying that, well, that this represents a question? The answer is so obvious. The Ravina lishibushi lemaremar hu deboi. Ravina will first say the meaning of this is Ravina was just trying to see if Maremar was on his toes. Now, the literal translation is Ravina was lishibushi, was trying to mess up Maremar to create a, let's say, a sense of doubt regarding something that in truth is obvious, just to see if Maremar was sharp. Hahu uvda, dahave b'masa mechasya, there was a man, and uvda literally is an incident, but it's an incident involving a man where his male organ appeared like a marzev. Shafye mar barav ashi kikumus v'achshire. Mar barav ashi appears to hold like Ravuna, and that in the Marzev shape, according to Ravuna, he would be unfit. So what Mar Bravashi did, it seems that there's some type of operation that he performed, and he reshaped the man's Marzev organ to look like a kumus. And with that, he was Machshir the man. So that is once again looking like the kumus, so the zera, the male seed, has its proper temperature preserved, and when we saw before, as far as the gorid is concerned, we have the barza de chavita analogy. Hahu uvda da'av pumbadisa. There was an incident in the city of Pumbadisa. Istatim gufsa de shichva zera v'apik b'mokim ktanim. The male organ emits, in general, liquid waste, urine, and semen. However, the two actually come out, even though when one looks at things superficially, it appears coming out the same point. In truth, it's two separate tubes. They're separated by a very fine membrane. So what happened here in Pulbadisa is that the male seed tube got sealed, and the semen was emitted from where the ktanim. Ktanim is a nice word, simply referring to mei raglayim, or urine. So the shichva zera, the male seed, the semen, was emitted through the area that the urine would come forth. Sovar Rav Bevai Bar Abaye Lachshuri. Rav Bevai was of the opinion to say that's okay, he's still kosher. Rav Popi reacted to Rav Bevai, and he reacted harshly, and he said, Mishum da Asisu, because you come from me, Muloi. We're at the top of Daf Ayin Vov. There are different explanations of what Muloi is, but Rashi's explanation, he comes from Beis Eli. He's a descendant of Beis Eli. Eli was the Kohen Gadol at the time of Shmuel HaNovi, and his sons had behaved in an improper fashion, and they were punished by not ever reaching to die young, to die at 18, at a young age, with Torah learning and with chesed, so even they could extend their lives. But the idea is it's a type of cut-off people, so that you're a descendant from cut-off people, and you say cut-off things. In other words, you say improper, foolish things. And what's Rav Popi trying to tell Rav Bevai? How can you machshir the guy? B'mekoyma mevashla shelo b'mekoyma lo mevashla. Mevashla means to be, literally, is to be ripe or ready. In this case, it means the male seed is capable of fertilizing. When it comes out its right location, but shalobim koma, if it doesn't come out the right location, so it won't be capable of providing of creating fruitfulness, procreation. One has to just pause at a Gemara like this, which would ostensibly appear to be a rather cut and dry halachic section, but there's something to absolutely marvel at. You're dealing with location differences that are measured probably in microns, and he is saying that with this very minor location difference, that will make all the difference in fertility. And with that in mind, you see when the Almighty created his creatures, and here we're talking about man, it was done with such precision, and life goes on, and we're able to maintain this precision under healthy circumstances. And yet, when such a minor alteration or injury takes place, all the difference in the world is experienced. Something, once again, to marvel at, the level of precision that exists in the Bria. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our Shiur for today.